Want to talk about some work on liquid crystals that is sort of in the flavor of an upper critical field. And I guess one thing I would like to try to get across is that there are some similarities. There are important differences, like no gauge invariance in the liquid crystal energy. But on the other hand, there are some very nice similarities. And certainly the things that we've learned from the Ginsburg-Landau analysis have helped us to do a sort of upper critical analysis for liquid crystal energy. So I thought I would just put a little bit up on the board, since I want to have an analogy with Ginsburg-Landau, a little bit of background concerning upper critical fields for Ginsburg-Landau. And so let me first write the energy. You have an order parameter psi. And this domain omega is in Rn, a bounded open set. And it's relevant to think of it as either two or three dimensional. So the energy looks like this, I over kappa grad plus A times psi squared plus 1/2 1 minus mod psi squared squared, and then an integral over Rn of curl of A minus, let me put HE3 because that's usually what people have looked at. So if we were in two dimensions, this is an applied field, and it's an applied field that's perpendicular to omega. But if we were in three dimensions, it wouldn't have any particular orientation with respect to the domain omega. So this would be the R2 situation. And here the unknowns we minimize. So here we're given H, and we can take it positive without loss of generality, because we could just make a reflection or change of variables in our variable X. And we then want to think about minimizers in the class. So minimize over a class of admissible functions, and these are psi, the order parameter, which goes from omega into the complex plane. Each component should be W12. Is this okay? Can people? I am going to, yeah.
You're going to use it right away?
Pretty soon. But if you can't see, then I can move it back and then bring it back. Okay, let me just move it. Is it plugged in? Oh, it is plugged in.
The trouble is, now you're walking out again.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So we minimize, and this is the class of unknown functions, psi and W12 from omega to C, and A in, well, if it were in two dimensions, we would take the range to be, so A is a vector, we would take the range to be R2, thinking of 0 as the last component, so we can still talk about the curl. It would just be the curl of A1, A2, 0. That would be the meaning here. And, well, one is interested in behavior, especially in terms of some of these outside parameters, kappa and H, which are given. And physicists had observed that if H is too large, so if the applied field is too big, so physical observation, was that if H is too large, we get that a minimizer would be identically zero in omega. And since the modulus of psi at x represents the local density at x of superconducting electrons, this would say that that we have lost all superconductivity. The local density of superconducting electrons is identically zero in here. Yeah.
You want the curl of A to be close to H.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm giving an admissible set. So I should say we can say that curl of A minus H E3 should be in L2. And we can make a change of gauge, but I don't really want to talk about the change of gauge. In other words, there are some things that make this finite, and so we're minimizing over all of these states that have finite energy. So it actually doesn't really matter to put that in. Okay, and there was a theorem by Georgi, who's here somewhere, Tiziana Georgi, and Dan Phillips, I think around 2000, which really gave this result rigorously. It said that there are constants, let's say kappa naught and c naught, depending on omega, such that if H is more than C naught times kappa, and kappa is sufficiently large, then minimizers in A. And in fact, not only minimizers, but they were also able to say weak solutions of Euler-Lagrange system that corresponds to minimizing this thing in A must be normal. In other words, psi identically zero in omega. And so this result really was general. I think they assume smooth domains, but it's the same proof works for Lipschitz domains. It's a completely general result. We know now that if H is bigger than a certain multiple of kappa, we lose superconductivity. They were also able to characterize that if we pick the best C naught and call that HC2, that the HC2 is proportional to kappa. And I want to mention a lemma that this used, because I'm going to use a variant of that lemma in the work that I'm going to talk about after this. So let me put it over here. The work used a really nice covering argument, let's say in two dimensions, and also a result on interior balls in here. And it's sort of an eigenvalue type estimate. And this was a result of mine with Dan Phillips and with Chi Tong. And it was for the case of a disk. So we take just a disk, C sub r, in omega, and now this is a two-dimensional domain. So we have a disk, and let me write that disk here. And then there was an eigenvalue type estimate. Let me take a smooth field A of x, smooth, satisfying that the curl of A of x is identically equal to E3. And so if I multiplied it by H, then that curl of A would be identically HE3, which is this, what we call the exterior field. Okay, and in fact, when this thing gets very close to the upper critical value, the curl of A gets very close to H. So let me take any smooth vector field that satisfies this, let's say, in all of R2. We're working in R2. Then we get this kind of eigenvalue estimate. We showed that the integral of, let me write it this way, I grad plus omega squared against any eta squared is greater than or equal to omega squared times a function, I'll call it sigma, this thing is the same, but this function is going to be omega applied to omega times r and times integral over dr of zeta squared. So this is sort of an eigenvalue type estimate for the operator I grad plus omega squared, and it tells you how that eigenvalue behaves on a disk. And here it's important to know how this sigma, this function, behaves. Here's one, and here's some value less than one. This function sigma of s is something like this. It has a limit as s goes to infinity, which is less than 1. So if we knew, for example, that omega r was bounded from below, then we would get this estimate with a constant times omega squared. I'm sorry. I left it out. Omega squared times a. Thank you. That's important. This A is the A of X. And, And you might think, well, where did curl of A be identically equal to E3? Where did that orientation really come into this? And it's not really obvious, but what I understand now, partly through the Georgie Phillips work, is that you can think of the fact that E3 is perpendicular to this disk. And so if we, this is true, it's an eigenvalue estimate for all zeta in W12 from omega into C. And so you can think that by integrating this up and having a three-dimensional cylinder, and having an eta that's in W12 on this thing, every slice would be in W12 on a disk, and therefore you're able to get this estimate not just for dr, but for a cylinder, C sub r, L, dr cross, let's say, 0, L, in 3D. And then you can see that there is some relation between at least the volume integral and the domain of integration, the fact that curl of A is forming the axis here. E3 is actually parallel to the curl of A. So this estimate goes through in 3D in the form of cylinders. And it's this estimate that will actually generalize to analyze liquid crystals. So now I can use the overhead. Thank you. And let's see, maybe I'll just copy the part of this energy that's hidden. Actually, in two dimensions, this can be taken to be, if n was 2, this could be taken to be omega, because curl of A is identically HE3. But, okay. Let's see. And so today I want to talk about joint work with Carmen Caldera, Chun Liu, and Dan Phillips on phase changes in liquid crystals. So what I just talked about now was the phase change from normal or non-superconducting to superconducting, and there was a critical field involved, which was on the order of kappa, at least in my units. And you have to be careful when you don't have the I over kappa. Kappa can change to kappa squared in some other units. Okay, so, it looks like a horrible energy. This is a model that De Gennes had derived for liquid crystals that have chirality. The molecules are allowed to twist and bend, and they have a tendency to twist, measured by a chiral part that I'll get to later. So the energy has three parts, and again we have an order parameter psi going from omega into c. Here, n is a unit vector field. So that's different from our A of x, which was just W12, didn't have to have any particular length, and in certain gauges, solutions are smooth. Whereas here, that's an obstruction to having really high regularity. So the first part of the energy is these two terms, grad psi minus IQ n psi. So that looks very much like this, I over kappa grad psi plus A psi. So QN is a little bit like A if we just look at those terms. And then we've got a number, little g over 2, mod psi to the fourth minus r mod psi squared. So up to constants, that's like this 1 minus mod psi squared squared, if we complete the square, which is just adding a constant to the energy. And then we've got this part, which is pretty well known as the Frank energy for liquid crystals. And here, there are constants K1, K2, and K3, and those are elastic-type constants that are related to splay, twist, and bend tendency for that material. And I think that early work took all of those constants to be equal, in which case you get gradient of n squared, and things worked out better than they do here. And you also had coercivity automatically. But if you don't have them equal, earlier work said that you should add this term, the no Lagrangian. And this term is simply depending on the value of n at the boundary. And it makes this energy coercive. So you can still get existence when you have this. And so this part is well accepted among the people who work in liquid crystals. The chiral materials have another term, which is H, and it has nothing to do with those, the H over there. And in fact, later we'll set that equal to K sub 2 times tau. So tau would be defined by K2 and whatever is this number here. And you notice that this appears here, we can complete the square in this energy, right? So that's the chiral part. These are all given constants, QG, HC, R, they're all given constants. So many more constants floating around than in Ginsburg-Landau, and we make assumptions. Basically, first of all, K4 was negative, and but on the other hand, and you should think of K2 and K3 as being large, the scenario in which I want to look, it has K2 and K3 large, and on the other hand, K2 minus K4, we're going to take it to be bounded above and below. So as K2 gets large, K4 must also in absolute value, and the same.
Could you please pass back to the prior previous?
Yeah. So these are just the constants.
Right.
And the
case. Are psi and n coupled in that?
No, they're not. And these assumptions are that I just mentioned. These are pretty standard, and we're adding something a little more. For example, we're making K2 minus mod K4 bounded below. And we're going to later normalize the constant C to be 1. And, you know, I mentioned that we could complete the square in the energy. And so here's some work I've done. I've completed the square. And that has brought that K2 tau, which was H, against n dot curl of n into this complete square, and we've paid for it with this constant. And also that null Lagrangian is gone, and that's because there is this this identity. That's why that null Lagrangian makes this energy coercive, because you end up being able to bring in the gradient of n squared anyway. And then for minimizers, you're going to have, you know, a nice coercive control for minimizing sequences, and you can get minimizers in appropriate classes. Okay, unknowns, n of x, which is the director field. It should have length 1 here. It measures the local average orientation of the liquid crystal molecule. So again, it's average, like Ginsburg-Landau, modulus of psi squared is sort of local density. And you can think of the molecule, you know, it's not just an infinitesimal line. It has a thickness. And so n of x describes an average of those orientations of the molecule. Psi of x is an order parameter. And Degens put it in order to describe symmetric materials. So this model relates to symmetric. And to explain it, well, one way to understand it is this way. If I think of an undistorted liquid crystal example, one would be where n of x is constant. It's just constant everywhere, the same thing, and so it's got the same orientation everywhere. But you can think of having those things with different densities. I could have a layer where I've got several molecules here, but not so tightly packed, and then another layer where they're very tightly packed. And this order parameter has to do with that mass density. For example, in this case where n is constant and we have psi being rho 1 e to the iq n dot x. For Degens, that said that the density of molecules would modulate according to a uniform density plus something that would go up and down, rho 1 cosine of q n dot x. And in general, mod psi describes an amplitude of modulation of mass density. So you see, if psi is 0, then the density is just constant. But otherwise, especially if you think of n bar dot x in the direction of n bar, it can change, be more dense here, less here, and even in a periodic way, as this one is. Okay? So this is rather vague. Dzogchen set up a psi of x. Modulus of psi is this amplitude of mass density. The gradient of the argument has to do with a normal to a layer structure. Symmetrics are layered. And the absolute value of the gradient describes the layer number, maybe how many layers are packed together. Okay, here we have two phases. Pneumatic is where psi is identically zero for Dzogchen's model. And symmetric is where psi is not identically zero. So we have some possible layering. And here's a picture of some, first a chiral pneumatic and a formula. Psi, take it to be identically zero, and n sub tau is cosine tau x 3, sine of tau x 3, 0. So it's pneumatic because psi is identically zero. And you can think of that as actually maybe a limit of something that's layered where the molecules get more and more flat. And here's an example of a layered material with the formula that goes with Dzogchen's model for something where n of x is identically E3. All the molecules have the same orientation, but psi, again, has this periodic density. So we can think of that as, like in the picture, more density, less, more, etc. So that's as much sense as I can make out of Dzogchen's model. And I think I've mentioned some of the analogs with Ginzburg-Landau. There was some work by physicists in 1988, and they have looked at analogs of Ginzburg-Landau. Here there are so many parameters floating around in the energy. It's not quite so simple, H versus kappa. But certainly physicists have done some work. And here's one picture where all these constants are temperature dependent, with temperature thought of as fixed here, just like in Ginzburg-Landau. And in this one, H is that K2 tau. When that's large, you get pneumatic. In this phase diagram by the physicists Wren and Lubensky, there's also a type 1 and a type 2. So we can think of having some combination, maybe K2 large, but you know, maybe some other things, we have to assume something about those as well, and try to get our first mathematical result on pneumatic versus symmetric for this energy. And that's what we did. Let's see. I have until 3:15, is that right? Okay. So let's get started. We actually take an admissible set to be any set where psi is W12 and complex valued, and n is W12 and valued in R3 with length 1. But we wanted to contain this, what I call pure twist, n sub tau, the pure twist given by this formula. Okay? So, for example, I could take any 3D domain, which is confined between two parallel plates. And then I could say that n dot nu should be zero on top and bottom. That's an admissible set that would contain this. I could also take an omega that is bounded and is not touching any plates at all and take no boundary conditions. That would certainly contain, all I want to do is have it contain this n sub tau. Okay? So there's lots of boundary conditions that go with this. And in some sense, the n sub tau is sort of like the curl of A being HE3 in Ginzburg-Landau. When things get critical, the orientation vector n gets close to a rotation of n sub tau. At least that's what's observed, and we show it as well.
When the Dzogchen wrote down the model, did he specify boundary conditions, or
In these models, there are many types of boundary conditions that are realistic. Dirichlet, Neumann, mixed. That's why we wanted to keep it general. Okay, so let me just state this as a proposition. there is a minimizer in this class A, and the work, you know, I've shown you that the terms are relatively nice with non-negative coefficients, and the work of Hart, Kindler, and Lin in 1986 really gives you the idea for how to get minimizers. There isn't anything more that you really have to do. Okay, and shouldn't be there. I guess another thing is, you know, where is this n sub tau? I mean, I want to think a little more about this n sub tau because it's so important in the analysis. So let me take any tau which is non-zero and just consider a U in W12, a vector field which is length 1 almost everywhere again, and satisfying curl of U plus tau U is 0 in the domain omega. And then we can show that up to a uniform rotation, that one has to be n sub tau. So n sub tau is really the solution to curl of n plus tau n is 0 and length of n equals 1. And it's the solution up to a rotation or change of frame. Any other solution would be Q n tau of Q transpose X. And that's really, I mean, I've written down an argument, but it's you could give it to your sophomore calculus students as an exercise in power series, maybe with vectors. You know, when you have curl of U plus tau U is 0, it forces U to be divergence-free, and we know from Ginsburg-Landau that then curl is minus Laplacian. Plug that in and to the equation, taking the curl of that, and you get minus Laplacian U is tau squared U. It's real analytic. You look at the gradient at a given point, and that determines whether you need a rotation. So it's smooth, and these are the only solutions to this problem. And I think for simplicity and talking about things now, I'm going to take K2 to be K3 and take C to be 1. And then the terms in the completing the square part, I guess they look like this. I can combine them. And remember, as K2 gets large, K4 does also. K2 minus mod K4 was bounded between two constants, so this goes to 1. And you can see the relevance of that curl of n plus tau n is 0 if we took K2 to be large. And if we had control on this thing, curl of n plus tau n of x would be getting close to such a solution, at least the energy. You can see where it comes in. So if I take K2 equal to K3, and we don't need to, we just need to take K2 and K3 large, then the energy becomes nicer looking. We have this de Gennes term, and we have a grad n divergence of n and a nicer curl of n term. Looks more and more like Ginsburg-Landau. We've completed the square and made these combinations. So let me state the main theorem. There are a lot of parameters here. And that was, I think, at first a very hard thing to do, is figure out. Every physics book you look in has a slightly different picture depending on what they had fixed and change of variables. And most of the pictures have no effects of the domain. They're looking at R2 or R3. So here's something that was in line with Wren and Lubensky's result, which was looking at all of R3. And linearizing. It says that we can find some constants, lambda and beta lower and upper bar, depending only on omega. We can find constants K lower bar and upper bar, depending on Q and omega, so that if tau, which was this chiral pitch in the energy, satisfies that lambda tau is less than or equal to q, so that's saying that q over tau should be sufficiently large. K2 should be sufficiently large, greater than or equal to k bar. Then if psi n is a minimizer of A in E, and R is bigger than a certain constant, depending on Q and tau, then psi will be identically zero. So it's mostly that K2 is large that's going into this, but we have to have some other things. And in fact, Ren and Lubensky, we have Q over tau greater than or equal to some constant. They did asymptotics where Q over tau was very large. So this is in line with what they had. And we can also say that if K2 is still large, and we have some, we relax and say that tau is less than or equal to Q rather than lambda times tau, and we look at a minimizer, and R is smaller than a certain multiple. If Q tau is large, it's the quadratic Q tau squared, then psi is not identically zero. So what that tells us is that this upper critical curve that we're getting here is really linear. They're both proportional. So it's like Q tau squared and then linear. This R is negative. So it's, I think I said quadratic. It's linear at infinity. This R was negative, like in the Ginsburg-Landau, this coefficient of mod psi squared over there. So this tells us that, and the Ren and Lubensky picture involved R in K2. So this is in line with their picture, and basically says if K2 is large, which is what the physicists emphasize as really the main physical thing that's forcing the pneumatic, that you have psi identically zero. So that's our main result. And proof of the theorem, I just want to mention two lemmas. First, again, some hypotheses on these parameters, but let's take R2 to be all the rotations of our n sub tau. Then if I take an epsilon positive that we just are given, anyone, and take K2 and K3 sufficiently large, and I look at a minimizer, then the n of x that goes with that minimizer is within epsilon of a rotation of n sub tau. So it shows, like Ginsburg-Landau, near the critical size, we're getting close to this external field that seems to be important. And the other thing that is use is a generalization of this lemma that I wrote over there. This lemma has a version integrated over all of omega. I mentioned the covering argument, and that was part of how Georgie and Phillips got their result. So the lemma here is that there are constants lambda, beta, upper, and lower bar. And if Q over tau is sufficiently large, and eta is anything in W12 of length 1, I have upper and lower bounds on the eigenvalue for the operator I grad plus Q n sub tau. Similar to what we had here, the operator was I grad plus omega squared A. Let me just mention that the idea, let me write over here. So it doesn't simply come from this. you know, you might think, well, we've got a multiple of n sub tau, so we can just use this. But the curl of here, the curl of A had to be identically equal to E3, and we took a covering argument involving those cylinders. Well, here we have n sub tau, and the curl of it is tau times n sub tau. It's variable. But we can, if we think about our three-dimensional domain omega, we can think about a point xj, and we know that for k sub 2 large, we're getting close to n sub tau, so we should be thinking about that type of eigenvalue estimate. If we look at n sub tau in this cylinder, it's approximately n tau at xj plus grad n sub tau at xj times x. And we can think of this as an a of x. And so qn tau is like q a of x. Maybe I should call it capital A of x. Because if I divide that, this is a linear function now, just like the one that whose curl is HE3. If I divide this by this A of X by Q tau, its curl is N sub tau at XJ. So I can use a variant and cover this thing by cylinders whose axis is N sub tau of XJ. And I can prove a more general version of this with n sub tau replacing a of x there. And so I get an estimate something like this on appropriate cylinders, and then I use a covering argument. And when you combine, this lower estimate tells you, I guess, that this kind of term, when you apply it to a minimizer, is bounded from below by a certain multiple of mod psi squared. And then a priori estimates give you a certain multiple of mod psi squared above. And when you take the parameters big enough, the constant on the left is bigger than the one on the right. That's how you get psi identically zero. And here it works in the same way, but with this type of argument replaced by an n sub tau type of eigenvalue estimate. Okay, so I'll stop here.